Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome to today's program Mike Chalman, who is Vice President, North American Operations at CLX Logistics. And today we're going to talk about getting smart on transportation, the role of market intelligence in procurement and continuous improvement. Certainly, when you look at, some of the big industry trends in the supply chain logistics industry today, big data, analytics, benchmarking, those are all terms that a lot of people are talking about and discussing. And the question is, well, what exactly is business intelligence and market intelligence? And how do you apply it within a transportation perspective to derive, business value from it and continuous improvement? And that's going to be kind of the heart of the conversation today with Mike. So I'm very happy that he's taking the time to join us today. Just want to remind those of you that are joining us today that, part of our goal here at Talking Logistics is to make this conversational. So as Mike and I are having our conversation, if you have a question or a comment for Mike, you can do so via the post a question button or via the chat feature. And certainly if we've got time and it's a good and appropriate question, I'll weave it into the conversation here. And finally, if you are joining us as a visitor today, just a reminder that you do have to sign in first before you can ask a question. So with that, Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Adrian. I'm glad to be here.
So Mike, as a first-time guest on Talking Logistics, whenever I have someone new, I always like to kind of understand how and why they got into, the industry. So why don't we start there? Why don't you tell us briefly, a little bit about your career path, how and why you got involved in supply chain logistics, and what your current role and responsibilities are there at CLX Logistics?
Certainly, I'm glad to. So I've been in transportation and logistics for more than 25 years, during which I've worked for a variety of carriers and 3PLs. I think like a lot of people of my generation, my entry into the industry was the old-fashioned way. I sort of stumbled into my first transportation job when I left the Air Force in 1990. But it turns out that it was a happy accident because it's been a very good, rewarding career. I've been able to live in a lot of places and do a lot of things. Today, I'm outside of Philly as the VP of Operations, as you said, for CLX Logistics. We are an asset-light 3PL. We offer technology solutions as well as the managed services that I oversee, intermodal, international. Specifically, what I'm responsible for is the what you would traditionally call the outsource services, shipment planning and execution, customer support, reporting and analytics, continuous improvement programs, brokerage operations, and carrier management programs, under which our benchmarking and bidding discipline resides, which is what we're going to talk about today, which is how market intelligence impacts, that particular function.
Great. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a common theme, with guests on the program that for a lot of them they kind of stumble, into the industry, if you will, or they start in a different career path and somehow end up in transportation and supply chain logistics, which is, similar to me as well. Like folks that have watched the program a long time know that I started my career in manufacturing and new product development, and with a background in material science engineering. So it's always interesting to kind of see the different backgrounds and experience, and certainly you bring, with your career path, different perspectives into the industry as well. So let's get into the topic now, and let's start with the kind of a basic question, but I think it's an important one because, sometimes we can get caught up with terminology and I think definitions mean, certain terms mean different things to different people. So, what type of information, when we talk about market intelligence, what type of information falls under the umbrella of transportation marketing intelligence? In other words, what, type of data information should companies seek to collect?
Good question. I think that's a good place to start. And specifically, I'd like to start with a description of what I would say market intelligence is not limited to, because I think there's a little bit of a preconceived notion that when we talk about the market, we're talking about line haul rates. That is certainly an important part of market intelligence, but a really robust intelligence program is going to consider a number of factors, some quantitative and some qualitative. On the quantitative side, without question, the biggest component is line haul rates, but also, in consideration should be things like the fuel surcharge program, how it's structured, how that relates potentially to the way that carriers are approaching their line haul rate, accessorial fees, both what activities are eligible for payment and what amount is paid for each one, what insurance requirements you have in place for your carriers, and things like that. So there's a bunch of things that reside in the in the orbit around rates that will impact rates and that also need to be considered individually. So that's the quantitative side. On the qualitative side, which doesn't necessarily get a lot of play, I don't think, certainly not as much as perhaps it should in the industry. I think the important things to look at are things like how's your carrier program structured? Do you have a core carrier program? How many carriers do you use? How do you determine who's a core carrier and who's not a core carrier? Under your contracts with your carriers, what's the typical structure and the duration of those contracts? How often do you refresh those, or do you refresh the T's and C's? What's the structure in terms of volume commitments or no volume commitments? On the invoicing side, again, a lot of these things that I mentioned are kind of related to how the market views you, in addition to how you're viewing the market. But things like invoicing procedures, what payment terms do you typically apply? How good or bad are you at paying invoices in a timely manner, in an accurate manner? So those types of things all kind of relate to, again, the view of how the market views you. In my experience, a carrier will walk past a rate that's a nickel higher or a dime higher if they know that along with that rate comes complications like the truck gets delayed chronically at the shipper, or the driver isn't treated well, or the invoice doesn't get paid or doesn't get paid correctly. So you have to consider how all those types of things affect how you're viewed in the market, in addition to your understanding of what's out there. Similarly, procurement frequency, how do you go to market? How often do you go? How do you structure your bids? Do you do big bang, sort of large strategic bids? Do you do more spot bids or some combination? And then maybe lastly, what's your operation structured like relative to others of a similar type of shipper? Who is selecting carriers for specific loads? Is that centralized or decentralized? If it's decentralized, how much latitude do the locations have to make independent choices about what carriers are going to get loads? Because you can have a great carrier program, you can have great rates, you can have great structure, but if it's not being executed in the field the way it's structured, then it becomes of much less value to you. And so you really need to understand not only what are the dollars and cents, but then what are all the other processes and influences that impact what you look like in the market relative to your peers and to your competition.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. I think you're right. I think for the initial inclination is always to think of the quantitative aspect of it, right? And particularly line haul rates and to really kind of, when people are thinking benchmarking, right? So benchmarking all those numbers. But I think that there's equally important, and you can maybe even make the argument even more important, is really gathering intelligence and benchmarking, the on the qualitative side in terms of how you're structured as a transportation organization, how you manage the processes, how you manage the relationships, how the business rules that you have, so on and so forth, relative to your peers in the industry and perhaps other in other industries, because there might be some best practices or leading practices in other industries that might be applicable. Are good to perhaps implement within your own organization. So I like that kind of your perspective on it, to really think about not only the quantitative aspect of it, but the qualitative side as well. Now, and I know this is the case, for a lot of companies, some of this information or insights or knowledge or intelligence is arguably easier to gather than others. I mean, what challenges do you see out there in terms of companies face in collecting market intelligence, and how do they overcome those challenges?
I think there's a couple specific elements that I think make getting good market intelligence difficult for a typical shipper, and in many cases more of a mid-sized shipper, which comprises a good portion of our customer base. One is just having the time and the resources to be able to keep a finger on the pulse of what's happening in the market. And in many cases, particularly with a smaller company, the level of expertise of the market broadly beyond the specific activity that, that relates to that particular shipper is not always resident in-house. The other thing that I see, and again, I don't know that this gets talked about a lot because I think that maybe it causes people to be uncomfortable, is I think there's a general reluctance on the part of many shippers to be concerned about revealing too much proprietary data. Everybody wants to get data, but when folks are worried about revealing, something about their particular logistics operation, about their carrier relationships, people get very reluctant to do that. I'm a big proponent, having spent a good portion of my career on the carrier side of the house, I'm a big proponent of treating carriers like a business partner and not like a vendor, and setting up processes that allow carriers to make a fair return on what they're doing and to get paid a market competitive rate. Having said that, having been on the carrier side myself, I know that divide and conquer is a very common strategy where if people don't know what other people are paying for similar services, it makes it much easier for the carrier to demand a rate or a particular aspect of the relationship that they want. I would never propose that anybody should collude about rates, but it is important to know when you're looking at market intelligence sources, what aspects of what you're seeing relate to what you're doing, and in some cases you have to put in to get out. We will often work with shippers who will make their rates available for us to use for benchmarking in a non-attributable sort of general way where we can see the detail that we need to be able to compare to others, but nobody can actually see their rates. The other thing that I see fairly often is, in the age of the internet, it's great that there's lots of information available, literally at the touch of a finger. So if someone is going to generally public sources to get information, I think one of the challenges is the information that you're getting accurate? Is it applicable to what your particular shipping requirements are? And is it current? Not current in terms of, currency like dollars, but is it fresh data? So I think that, when you're going to sources that say on a particular lane or in a particular region, a truckload rate is X or a bulk rate is Y, sometimes it's hard to really know what that means. And does that rate really apply to my service levels, to my equipment requirements, to all the things that I have as part of mine? So, there's a lot of information available, a lot of data available is probably the better way to say it. How you turn that into actionable, relevant information, I think, is the challenge. From my perspective, having been on both sides, I think the best course of action for a typical shipper is to find a trustworthy partner. Could be a consulting house, it could be a 3PL, could even be a carrier who has a much broader view of the market and access to more information than what the shipper by himself is going to be able to have access to. I think if you do that, then you really start kind of getting into sort of the hive mind mentality of, I only know a little bit, but if I get with people who know a lot more than me, then I know a lot more. So that's really kind of the key, I think, as far as overcoming the challenge, is to recognize what you don't know and then find people who do know those things and being willing to share some aspects of your data in order to get more information about what other people are doing.
No, I agree. I mean, I think I think that's a critical role that, both third-party logistics providers and, cloud-based software as a service based, TMS providers, it's a value add that they can provide, right? Because if you've got multiple clients that are transacting through one single TMS, as an example, by default, you kind of have, you're creating this database of data and information across multiple companies, multiple industries that you as the, TMS provider or you as a 3PL, can then play that role in terms of taking that data and, creating an appropriate model to do the benchmarking and analyze the data and then being able to communicate that back out to, the customer base. And certainly, to your point, I'm seeing more and more shippers look to their 3PL providers, look to their, SaaS TMS providers, to provide that kind of level of market intelligence. And I think for the qualitative side, I mean, I think that's probably, where, to your point, there needs to be a little bit more person-to-person communication and collaboration there in terms of, sharing ideas and sharing, practices. Again, not giving out company secrets, but at the same time, I think one of the, to me at least, one of the interesting things about transportation is that that you could probably get more benefit through collaboration, information exchange, because we're all, at the end of the day, all shippers are working with, within the carrier community, and if we can make the carriers more productive and effective, that ultimately helps everybody in the ecosystem, if you will. But it's getting that kind of the changing the status quo to, promote that kind of information exchange for the benefit of everyone, if you will. And certainly a great place to do that is at live events. I know you've got your conference coming up next week, and I'm going to be speaking at it there. So that's a great opportunity, obviously, for folks from the industry to get together and over cocktails or as part of the educational sessions to really kind of share some of that knowledge. So let's talk about now putting market intelligence in action, right? Let's talk about procurement. I mean, what role, what value does market intelligence play in transportation procurement?
But you broke up a little bit at the end, but I think what you asked was about the role of market intelligence in the procurement process. My view, it plays a huge role, perhaps the most important role. To steal an old expression from the legal world, they always say a trial lawyer should never ask a question to which he doesn't know the answer. And I think in the same vein, a procurement effort should never be undertaken without having a good understanding of what the market is and what outcome you expect. A lot of the processes that we do with our shippers don't always lead to the procurement event. What we do benchmarks on a regular basis, just as an example, we did one earlier this year with a customer who had contracted with us to do a benchmark and bid. And so we went through the benchmark process, and at the end of that, went back to the customer and said, based on where you're at in the market, based on what we see, now is not the time to bid. And that was, early in the second quarter, late in the first quarter. Which I think surprised them, but they appreciated the fact that we didn't just plow ahead because we didn't think we were going to get a result that was going to be as favorable to them as it could have. So what we did, we didn't do nothing in response to that. At that point, we did more strategic or more surgical engagements, specific lanes where we might need to introduce a new carrier, or specific lanes where there's a service issue that needs to be addressed or even a rate issue that needs to be addressed versus throwing everything out to bid. Now, with that customer, here we are now, fast forward to September, and the market that they operate in has changed some, and now we are going to go to bid. But, had we not done the intelligence gathering first, we would have gone to bid at the wrong time. So I do think that, certainly the quantitative information is absolutely critical to do in a bid. You have to have that, otherwise you just don't know what your outcome is going to be, and there's a good chance that you are going to upset some rates that are still, in play for you, but if you put them out to bid now, maybe some good rates get degraded, and maybe you don't get the poor rates to improve to the level that you need to because you don't know for sure which ones you should be pushing on and how far you should be pushing. So, I do think that without the intelligence, you're kind of shooting in the dark, and you may or may not hit your target.
Right. And I would think that part of that intelligence is really, there's a lot of third-party sources of intelligence that, provide insights into what's happening with, capacity or driver shortage or, what's happening with imports and exports, so on and so forth, right? To kind of give you that pulse of whether, there's increasing demand or what's happening on the capacity side. So I think I would assume that that's part of the intelligence that you look at in terms of trying to figure out or determine, what the current environment, transportation environment is relative to what your needs or what you're looking to accomplish. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly correct. That's well said. Because really, all those things, the rates, and then some of the things that influence, your negotiating position with carriers is just what's showing up in the trade press, what's showing up in the industry publications. So if there's lots of talk about driver shortage, as there has been, you know, certainly earlier this year, there was much more so even than there is today, but still an issue, but it was very much in the press. And so that sort of creates this expectation that everybody is dealing with a driver shortage, when in fact, if you looked at, you know, even North America, which is where I spend my time looking, you know, there were areas of North America, certain regions and certain geographies and certain modes that did not feel the crunch as, you know, to the extent that others did. So, you know, if you allow some of the high level static to sort of drive your strategy, you may be trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist for you, or you may be trying to solve the wrong problem.
Yeah, that's a great point you just brought up. I mean, sometimes, obviously, as in anything, the more detailed and granular the insight that you have, you know, the more intelligent decisions you're going to make, right? So sometimes you can easily get fooled or lead to the wrong conclusion if the intelligence or the information you're looking at is too high level, too broad, right? So I think that's probably another thing to kind of keep a lookout for. You know, I mean, are you seeing on the procurement side, are you seeing companies looking? I mean, it used to be, generally speaking, companies did procurement bids, you know, once a year, maybe once every 2 years. You know, it was very much a strategic type of engagement. Certainly over the past few years, we've seen companies really doing procurement on a much more frequent, you know, basis. And I would think that as a consequence, that also puts more importance on the need to have that market intelligence, particularly if you're going to be doing it on a more frequent basis. Are you seeing that? Is that kind of a trend that you're seeing as well?
Yeah, that is absolutely a trend that we're seeing as well. You know, the days of the annual bid or the biannual bid really are gone. Right, this market is changing so quickly. Certainly in these, you know, this last year or two, as we've started to come out of this period of tremendous recession, you know, the rates aren't, you know, to get a carrier to contract a 2-year rate is a little bit of a fantasy. Now, you may get somebody to sign the contract, but the reality is, unless they're making a volume commitment to you, a capacity commitment, that rate is only as good as, you know, as it continues to stand in the market going forward. And I think people should keep in mind today that, you know, from the sort of the depths, so the lowest point of the recession, going back now probably to the, you know, to the 2010 period, when at least from a transportation perspective, you know, rates and capacity and those things were at their most challenging, many carriers were not able to get rate increases for a period of time. And some were, you know, some were taking decreases to maintain some of their volume. So, you know, the pendulum does swing both ways. And so it really, if you're not watching and not getting good information to tell you which way the pendulum is swinging, then you don't know if it's going to be in your favor or in the carrier's favor. And that's a fundamental question to ask when you're going to go to bid. So the notion of, or the, you know, the old fashioned way of everything goes out to bid once a year, there are still some shippers who do that. I think it's probably not a wise strategy. I think the better strategy is develop mechanisms for keeping track of how your market is moving and how your market is changing, and then bid opportunistically. It could be that you reach a point where you say it makes sense to do an all-out bid. You know, we still see those happening in the market, but more and more we're seeing people be much more selective and much more specific about what gets bid and when. So instead of having one large bid in a year, you may have two or three or even four smaller events that are specific to a geography or a mode or some other, you know, very, very detailed aspect of the operation. I think people are getting smarter about how they do that. And I think that that's a direct result of people knowing more than maybe they knew a few years ago about what's happening in the market.
So let's talk about, you know, the role of market intelligence beyond procurement. You know, obviously, I think that the market intelligence can play a role in just driving continuous improvement, you know, across, you know, transportation. What other ways can market intelligence help drive continuous improvement in transportation?
Well, I think that, you know, that the whole notion of knowing your market and knowing what the challenges are and what the opportunities are has broad reach, not just on the procurement side. For example, you know, having some intelligence and some understanding of what's happening in the world of TMS applications is critical to sort of driving the transportation operation in general, and not necessarily specific just to rates and relationships. You know, a few years ago, Well, if you go back a lot of years to where I got involved in the industry, you know, things ran on AS400s and things were green screen, and they were very, you know, they were very centralized and very kind of clunky. They were stable as all get out, but they weren't particularly flexible. And over time, now look at what's happened with, you know, with TMSs, where now you can buy software as a service and you can get very specific applications. So I think that type of intelligence is important to have. What's happening in the market, and what's happening, you know, relative to my own portfolio of transportation solutions and activities. The other thing that I think is really critical from the standpoint of continuous improvement, as it does relate maybe to capacity and procurement, is, you know, if you're watching the market across all modes, you may find ways to improve your operation and to improve your access to capacity. For example, by, you know, shifting from over the road truck to, you know, to intermodal or to rail. If you're watching what's happening in the market and seeing that maybe there's some capacity challenges on the truck side, but maybe there's some availability on the intermodal side, well, now you can not only get a better rate, but maybe you're going to continue to improve the general efficiency of your operation, you know, by getting away from how you've historically done things and leveraging the current state of the market versus, you know, the way things have always been. So I do think that as you start getting that intelligence of what other shippers are doing in the market, you know, to your point earlier, ones that are in the same industry and even ones that are not, because there's a lot of commonality across shippers that have nothing to do with industry and has not as much to do with commodity. But there's still a lot of, you know, a lot of it has to do with geography and modes and, you know, customer service expectations. So when you start looking across those things, then you start seeing, you know, opportunities to, you know, to do things within your operation, to do things within your logistics function that you might not have known to do if you weren't watching what other people are doing in the marketplace.
No, great points. And I like your point about kind of keeping a pulse of what's happening on the TMS front or the technology front in general. You know, there was a Harvard Business Review article from a few years back that talked about kind of key attributes or key things that supply chain logistics leaders need to do to remain successful leaders. And I remember one of the bullet items was develop a strong relationship with the CIO and the IT team, because obviously as IT and technology play a bigger and bigger role in supply chain logistics and transportation in particular, staying abreast of, you know, how technology can help continue to drive efficiencies and process you know, continue to drive innovation, if you will, you know, having that knowledge of what's happening in the landscape, and then having the relationships either with third-party logistics providers or your TMS vendors or others that are kind of the axis of technology to be able to bring those to bear, I think is very important. So I agree with that one particularly. You know, I just want to remind, you know, we're kind of getting short on time here. I've got a couple more questions, but I just want to remind those of you that are watching live today that if you do have a question or a comment for Mike, you know, now would be the time to, you know, post those. You know, we already kind of touched upon this a little bit, you know, the fact that, you know, transportation is a very kind of dynamic environment. So, you know, market intelligence can quickly become, you know, outdated. You know, how do you keep the intelligence up to date? I mean, what do you do? What should companies do to make sure that the market intelligence that they have and that they're basing decisions are truly a current reflection of reality?
Yeah, in my view, it's a philosophical approach, and it's sort of a, you know, sort of a business strategy approach. If you think about other things that we do in our businesses, you know, financials and customer relationships as two good examples, you know, you don't visit those once a year and then sort of let things go and then check in a year later and see how things are. You know, you look at your P&L every month and in some cases every week. You have active and evolving customer relationship and sales strategy plans. And market intelligence as it relates to the logistics environment should be the same. It should be part of what you're doing on an ongoing basis. So I'm a big believer of, you know, subscribe to the key periodicals that talk about your particular area of transportation. You should be doing lots of that reading. There's lots of good magazines and lots of good now online sources where you can be getting stuff in a lot of cases pushed to you. You can set up a Google alert that hits some of the keywords that relate to your transportation procurement function. I do that a lot. I have a whole bunch of Google alerts set up for various keywords and key terms, and so I get stuff pushed to me that I might have missed otherwise. So I think that that's the key, is to just sort of make it embedded in the fabric of what you're doing, so that it's not a matter of every April 1 we do a bid, and now the bid is done and the contracts get signed and they get put in a binder and put on the shelf and we'll talk about it again next April. And that, for a long time, that was the way a lot of transportation departments ran. And you just can't do that today. It's got to be absolutely embedded in the mindset of your organization. And, people need to see it. Certainly other people and senior leaders in your organization need to see what is happening on the logistics front, on the transportation front, as a key business enabler. It's not a cost center. It's not somewhere where you got to say, budget time comes around, and I'm sure this will resonate with many of the people that are watching this. Budget time comes around and transportation and logistics gets told that rates need to come down, or cost needs to come down 4% next year. Well, it's an arbitrary number. What does that mean? What is the intent of what we're trying to do relative to supporting the business?
Hey, Mike.
I think that when you look at it that way, when you change the philosophy of it's not just something that happens after the plant is finished with their work, or after the warehouse their work. Yes. Oh, did I lose you, Adrian?
Hey, Mike, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I see me and I see you.
Okay. Hey, Mike, are you there?
Well, I'm going to guess that the people who are watching are seeing one or the other of us. Because my screen says you're on screen and everybody can see me. So, but Adrian seems to not see me. So I'm going to assume that you all can see me, because if you can't, then I'm just a crazy person talking to himself. But again, I think, the philosophy that we're talking about here, of making this part of the business and not sort of an adjunct to the business, is key to making this thing successful.
Oh, Greg, can you see and hear me now, Mike?
Yeah, I've had you all along, and I see we just got a note from Alan saying that he can see and hear both of us. So I did. Great. You blinked out for a while, and so I talked about you for a while when you were gone, but now you're back, so we pressed on.
Great. Great. Well, that's the beauty of doing these live episodes. Sometimes, IT has a way to, even though we talk positively about IT, IT sometimes comes in and throws a monkey wrench into things. But great comments. I was able to see you, but I kind of, my camera got frozen there for some reason. But great. I think great insight there. I mean, I think your recommendation in terms of how to stay kind of informed of the market, are great ones. And certainly, obviously, that's part of our goal here at Talking Logistics and doing these types of video episodes to kind of continue to provide folks with thought leadership and ideas and advice, and keep a pulse on what's happening in the marketplace. And I think particularly for some of the younger professionals in the industry, I think that they've become kind of accustomed to really leveraging some of the newer technologies and capabilities with search and social media, so on and so forth, to kind of keep a pulse on that market. As a way to wrap up, what advice would you give to companies that are looking to enhance their, transportation market intelligence and their ability to ultimately derive benefit from it?
Well, I think the most important thing I can say, I just had this conversation with a customer last week, is don't panic. There's a lot of churn right now in the industry. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of talk about upcoming regulations and the hours of service and onboard electronic data recorders and the capacity shortage. There's a lot of stuff that's happening, and so I think sometimes people become alarmed and start saying, I got to do something different, or I'm not going to have capacity. I think there's a difference between being aware and being alert and being afraid and panicked. And I think if you start thinking that the wheels have come off figuratively, then maybe you don't make the right decision. So, as I mentioned earlier, the pendulum swings, and right now, it's a carrier-friendly market. And that's okay, because a few years ago it was a shipper friendly market, and a few years from now it's going to be again, and the pendulum will continue to go back and forth. So, you know, I think that that's the most important thing, is just understand that we're going through a cycle that has gone through many times and will be gone through again. And so I think you have to be sensitive, and you have to be respectful of the fact that it's a dynamic market. But you also have to be deliberate. And, you know, the best way, I think, to be deliberate and to make good choices is to get ahead of the information. You know, even if you're not planning to bid right now, it's not a bad time to be looking at the market and gathering market intelligence and gathering benchmark information. Even if you just finished a bid in July, it's not a bad time to be double checking and saying, did I get the result that I wanted? Is the market moving already, or are these rates going to hold up for a period of time? So I think that's really the key, is to just be, you know, informed and deliberate and cautious. But you know, information is power, as they say. And in this case, the more information you have about where the market is and where it's likely to go, the more confident you can be that the strategy that you're enacting is the right one for where your company sits today. I think I stunned Adrian into silence.
Mike, you froze on me again.
Adrian, are you still there? All right. So I'm going to assume again that you guys can see.
I'm going to go ahead and refresh.
You're back, Adrian?
It's on my end. Are you there?
Yep, I can see you and hear you.
Can you see me, Mike?
It looks like Adrian has continued to have issues. So, I don't know. I can see you. I can hear you.
All right, let me go ahead and refresh one more time.
Okay. All right. Actually, while he's doing that, I'm going to look. It looks like a question just came in. I'm new to this technology, so let me read it and see. I'll read it out loud. You all can hear the question with me. So it says, Mike, have you structured relationships with your clients where carriers are collaborating, especially around capacity challenges? If so, are there specific incentives you implemented to ensure a win-win for the multiple carriers, you as the 3PL and your client? How about a similar sort of, okay, great question about collaboration. So yes, we actually are doing a couple things on the collaboration front. One is trying to get carriers, or customers rather, who have complementary freight flows to start working with us to put together backhauls and multi-leg moves and continuous moves. We're fortunate in our organization that we have lots of customers that run on our TMS, and most of those, virtually all of those, are interested in collaborating where it's going to help them to either get access to more capacity or maybe get better rates. So that's one thing that we are actively doing, and I think others in the industry may be doing as well. Because again, you know, the carriers are going to be doing a lot of that on their own, finding, you know, their continuous moves, keeping their trucks moving, limiting loaded miles, but they won't always see all the freight maybe that I can see, that my operation can see. So I think it's beneficial both to the shippers and to the carriers if we can identify places where a carrier is delivering and there's a potential load to pick up that's, you know, that's potentially in the same facility or certainly in the vicinity, versus the carrier having to look only in his own network and go somewhere else to get a load. So that is something that I think we will see more of. You know, I encourage our clients, if the other shipper involved is viewed as a competitor, I encourage them to, you know, compete in their marketplace. You know, if it's, you know, the maybe the consumer equivalent would be, you know, compete on the shelf, don't necessarily compete on the truck. It doesn't really benefit, you know, me as a shipper to pay a higher rate, because if I pay a lower rate, you may also get some benefit from it. I think that we have to be much more collaborative, and the customers that we have that are doing that, I think, would tell you that it's a valuable solution. From the carrier front, again, I think the carrot that works for the carriers is we see a lot of data, and the carriers don't see all that data. So if they're willing to cooperate with us on putting together continuous moves or backhaul programs, and be competitive in their rates and be forthright with their capacity availability, they're going to benefit too, because now they're going to see they're going to have access to a population of freight that they didn't have access to before. So it's a little bit of a tired saying, but I think it really can be a win-win-win for everybody. The 3PL wins because we're bringing value to two parties. The shipper wins because they're getting capacity assurance and they know they're getting competitive rates. And the carrier wins because they're getting to see freight that maybe they didn't see before, and now they can limit loaded miles or get specific loads that go to a destination that's of interest to them. So, you know, the more we are willing to share this common problem, I think the better we are at solving it together. That's my view.
Great question, Alan. Thank you for submitting it. And Mike, thanks for your insights there. You know, I always joke, and for everyone watching, for your patience and me disappearing there every few seconds there towards the end of this episode here. But like I joked with Mike ahead of time when we were prepping for this, I said, you know, if I disappear, it's no big deal. You're the star of the show here. So as long as you are all able to continue to get Mike's insights and advice on this topic, I think we hit a home run here. And Mike, like I always say at the end of all our episodes, you know, we always manage to scratch the surface on these topics, but I think we got the wheels turning and a lot of people's heads today, and you provided some great insights and advice. So thank you for making the time to be with us today.
Thank you, Adrian. I really welcome the opportunity to do it, and I hope I can do it again soon.
Great, and thank you, those of you that joined us live today. We got a great question from Alan, but if you're watching this today on demand and you do have a question for Mike, you can go ahead and find this episode on talkinglogistics.com and post a question or comment there, and I'm sure that Mike would be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you all for joining us today, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day.